WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan wasn't just touring Ocean City yesterday. He was also vetoing more than a dozen bills passed this session. One was aimed at creating greater transparency in emergency procurements, like the one that made headlines when he confidentially bought 500,000 COVID-19 tests from South Korea. The bill would require the governor to tell a legislative panel 72 hours after a contract is signed when authorizing a certain emergency procurement during a state of emergency. Hogan says extraordinary measures were necessary to keep Marylanders safe from the virus. Bill sponsor Delegate Brooke Learman said it's incredibly disappointing and quite frustrating that our governor would be opposed to shining a light on how his administration is spending taxpayer dollars. Even though the weather isn't very summer-like, many will still head to the beach this weekend.
As the unofficial start to summer gets underway, you can expect plenty of company heading to the Maryland and Delaware beaches. Jim Ports is with the Maryland Transportation Authority.
Obviously, with the COVID issue and the masks being relieved and people wanting to get out and about, I think you're going to see a pretty heavy travel weekend.
And if you haven't been to the beach because of the pandemic, you'll notice it is now all electronic tolling on the Bay Bridge to help keep traffic moving. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
If you are taking a road trip to the beach or anywhere this holiday weekend, you'll be paying a lot to fill up your gas tank. Prices are up more than a dollar from this time last year, according to AAA. The average price for a gallon of regular in the D.C. metro area ranges from $3.05 to $3.17. And Ocean City Mayor Rick Meehan is glad to see the crowds back.
I think there's a lot of anticipation. I think there's, you know, people are smiling. People are happy. They're so glad to be able to do things with their families and friends that maybe they haven't been able to do for the past year. So it's going to be an exciting time at the beach.
He says there's been a dramatic increase in visitors over the last month and a half, even over 2019. A man who was all over the national news after being convicted of murdering his pregnant wife 15 years ago will not be put to death.
A district attorney in Northern California decides not to seek a new death sentence for Scott Peterson, convicted of killing his pregnant wife Lacey in 2005. The state Supreme Court threw out that penalty last year. Lacey's family says Peterson deserves to die, but they agreed with the DA's decision because the process is, as they put it, simply too painful to endure once again. If Peterson's not granted a new trial, he'll be sentenced to life in prison. Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the Nats play a split doubleheader against the Brewers after their game was rained out last night. Game 1 starts at 2:05, Game 2 at 7:15. The Wizards play the Sixers in Game 3 of their NBA playoff series tonight at 7. The Wizards are down 2-0. The puck drops in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs this afternoon with the Islanders playing the Bruins. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C., on Tilden Street Northwest, eastbound lanes are blocked because of a fallen tree between Connecticut Avenue and 29th Street. In Gaithersburg, on 270 southbound, there is a crash. Two right lanes are blocked at Shady Grove, exit 8. Now into Virginia, on Route 1 northbound in Dale City, all the lanes are blocked for flooding between Orpards Boulevard and Bel Air Road. On the southbound side of Route 1 in Woodbridge, all the lanes are blocked for flooding between the Prince William Parkway and Bel Air Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid-50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region. Scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett with Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9
FM, WMAL. Hour 2 of the Saturday morning update, Memorial Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist for Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Big news on Capitol Hill Friday. The Republicans blocked the efforts to move forward with the January 6th commission, the investigation of the Capitol riots. John, help us understand this a little more than what we will hear from the mainstream media, which is basically spinning this that the Republicans were trying to protect Donald Trump and this was going to be a bipartisan commission. There's a little more to it than that, I think.
Well, there's much more to it than that. It is true that 35 Republicans broke ranks, so to speak, with leader Kevin McCarthy and voted to create the commission. It's also true that in the Senate, Republicans have not yet reached what's called the Magic 10. That is, 10 Republicans to join the Democrats breaking a filibuster and allowing an up or down vote on the bipartisan 9/11 style commission. Now, Democrats promised this is bipartisan, that it would be evenly balanced in terms of members and staff. On the other hand, there is a strong feeling that its mandate would be extended to politics and, yes, to Donald Trump. I spoke Friday to Congresswoman Michelle Steele of Orange County. She said that it was very clear that this commission was going to pursue Donald Trump. In her words, if this were just devoted to finding out how security broke down in the U.S. Capitol and how these hooligans were allowed in, she would be for it. But it's quite obvious that the mandate of the commission is going to be extended to outsiders, and that means one person alone, Donald J. Trump. I might add that she shared her feelings with her colleague from the neighboring district, Young Kim, also Korean-American. Ms. Kim weighed the pros and cons of the commission as presently constituted and voted no.
We're talking with John Gizzi from Newsmax. He is in Los Angeles this weekend, so we obviously want to ask about the efforts to recall California Governor Gavin Newsom. What is the latest?
Gavin Newsom is someone who changed times and circumstances, clearly benefited. Not long ago, recall supporters gathered more than enough signatures to make a recall election sometime in the fall a foregone conclusion. I might add that this comes 18 years after Golden State voters recalled Democrat Gray Davis, and choosing from a list of possible replacements, picked a Republican named Arnold Schwarzenegger. It seemed that history was about to repeat itself. But as Mark Twain once said, history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. In this case, COVID was the driving force fueling the recall signature gathering effort. Now, COVID is backing down. Increasingly, the Golden State is opening up and getting golden again. And Gavin Newsom's popularity and public approval of his performance in the State House is rising. According to a just-completed poll by the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC, 57% of Californians are now opposed to recalling Governor Newsom. Only 40% support the recall. That said, I spoke to Sean Steele, the Republican National Committee man in the state, and he told me don't focus my reporting just on COVID. Rather, consider the fact that power shortages, fires, and blackouts in the state, or brownouts, are things that voters are generally upset with Gavin Newsom about. In addition, the idea of introducing race theory, the controversial teaching method that begins with the assumption society is racist, has upset many parents. And as a result, the critical race theory drives recall of Gavin Newsom. Mr. Steele has not supported a Republican yet who's in the race. These include, of course, Caitlyn Jenner, former San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer, 2018 nominee John Cox, and mentioned but not yet officially in, former Director of National Intelligence Rick Grenell. So it's sure to be interesting, and this won't be the last report from California.
Plans are for President Biden to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin, a summit on June 16th. A lot of criticism on that one and a lot of concern. What are the key points, John?
Well, the key points are, one, is Joe Biden tough enough and hard enough to take on Vladimir Putin? Now, already, the newly minted U.S. president has called the Russian leader a killer, and he did not take back those remarks in his interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. But others are worried that the president has not been strong enough mentioning some of the red meat issues that truly make the Putin regime a subject of controversy worldwide. I've talked to a number of Russian dissidents about this. Mikhail Khodorkovsky, a prisoner of Putin's for 10 years and now head of a foundation in London, and Vladimir Karamirza, who twice was poisoned, he believes, by Russian security agents and twice survived. They feel that the president, at the very least, should bring up the situation in Belarus now, where a journalist was downed in a plane in an act of piracy and imprisoned in the city of Minsk. This is a clear violation of the Civil Aviation Accord of 1944 and was an act of nothing short of piracy. Today, that journalist and his girlfriend, who helped tell the world about the uprising in Belarus against the Lukashenko regime, are out of sight. The Putin government, the Kremlin, is the only government entity in the world that has so far endorsed this act of piracy. I might add that the case of Alexei Navalny, the great Russian dissident and opponent of the Putin regime, has been quiet lately. He was on a hunger strike that he stopped. He nearly died in a Russian prison, and before that was nearly poisoned. Will the U.S. president bring up these issues with the Russian leader he's called a killer? These are just some of the things that the American press and the eyes of the world will watch when Joe Biden goes to Geneva next month.
Typically, a Friday going into a holiday weekend is a day that the administrations will dump news that they would prefer not get a lot of coverage. How about that $6 trillion budget proposed by the Biden administration going into this Memorial Day weekend, plus the $1.7 in the American Jobs Plan, plus the $1.8 trillion in the American Families Plan, and the $1.9 trillion in the America Rescue Plan? Highest federal spending since World War II. Put it in perspective, John.
Well, first of all, I found the timing poignant that after all of these different measures he's proposing, not to mention his stand in favor of a $2.3 trillion infrastructure bill as opposed to the Republicans' $1 trillion, that the president would take the dark and dim Friday afternoon to tell the nation that he has a $6 trillion budget, as you said, the highest spending since World War II. It is quite obvious that unless he gets the vote of every Democrat in the Senate and manages to hold the Democrats wafers thin, five-seat majority in the House, he is not going to be able to get this budget through. So it's very likely that we will either see a repeat of the Obama years, going several years without a budget, and simply kicking the can, so to speak, down the line for months about the budget and keeping spending levels at the previous years, or we will see compromise in committees and conferences that will bring down the price tag on the Biden budget. In any event, what you saw unveiled yesterday afternoon is not what you will get when and if there is a budget.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist for Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. As always, John, thank you and enjoy Southern California.
And I never thought I'd say this, but It's nice to be on the freeway in California when it's jammed with traffic.
That's an interesting perspective on 405 and I-10 traffic in California. Oh, boy. And it is the Saturday morning update. John, thank you very much, and enjoy the traffic. Speaking of traffic, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland right now, looking in the traffic cameras, I don't see any accidents, so you should be traveling at the posted speed limit. Between the two Beltways in Prince George's County on the VW Parkway and on 95, there is no reports of any slowdowns northbound or southbound. Route 50 in Prince George's County is clear between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, east and west. And at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And 270 is clear between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid-50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region, scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning, high temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Still 52 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 720 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us for this Memorial Day weekend. And if you would like to get out and participate in some special events, would like to tell you about the Military Women's Memorial and the Summer with the Arts exhibition that is being sponsored by Uniting Us. And we're joined by Cynthia Scott. She is an Air Force veteran. She is a veteran artist. She is a founding member of Uniting Us. And I'm sure I've missed a couple of things. Cynthia, thanks for being with us.
It's so good to talk to you, Rick. I just wanted to talk about Uniting Us, especially, you know, about post-traumatic stress. But the military has a thing called post-traumatic growth. It's not just the military. The military as a family has something that it can offer to the American public at large after this pandemic. And it comes in the form of the healing powers of art.
Well, I know that you're doing the Summer with the Arts exhibition, and that's something, I mean, we've all been cooped up now for the last year. This is something you can get out this weekend and actually visit.
There is a physical display. It's open to the public, and it's open and available through Labor Day. And we have about 180 artworks from over 100 military artists, whether they're family members, active duty, veteran, family. The military family is represented really amazingly well in this exceptional exhibition at the Military Women's Memorial.
And tell us about the Women's Memorial as well, which is in Arlington.
Well, the Military Women's Memorial is a spectacular edifice. It's actually located as the ceremonial entrance to Arlington Cemetery. So what more fitting place to come for Memorial Day when you see the tombstones just dotting the hillside. It's such a spectacularly beautiful setting and very solemn and sacred space. And we've made the interior of the Military Women's Memorial come alive with this vibrant exhibition from military artists.
Give us an example, one of the pieces of art that's on display.
One of the most powerful pieces is done by Lee Cortez, at least for me, and it's called Till the Death, and it's five panels. They're each 4 foot wide by 12 foot tall, so they're huge casings. This woman, Lee Cortez, is an Army veteran. Her husband's an active duty combat soldier with multiple deployments, and they're currently living in Savannah, Georgia. But she's a tattoo artist by training. So if you want to see a really powerful piece, Till the Death is one of about 180 artworks that are on display at the Military Women's Memorial. The exhibition really has a strong emphasis on this concept of healing and this idea of post-traumatic growth. And a lot of military veterans recognize that it is a sign of strength to ask for help, and that one way to promote healing is through the arts, whether it's visual arts, music, or creative writing. Art is a way back. If you look on our website at unitingus.org, you'll see not only about the current exhibition, but we have three program dates at the Military Women's Memorial. June 26th will be all about a healing arts celebration. We'll be doing performing arts, and on August 28th, we're going to celebrate family and wellness.
Now, the Military Women's Memorial is right at the entrance of Arlington National Cemetery, right?
That's right. You can get there by metro, or you could drive. There's a big parking garage, and it's on Memorial Avenue and Schley Drive in Arlington, Virginia. It's open to the public, and it's the exhibit that's put together by UnitingUs.org. It will be available to the public through Labor Day. Uniting Us already has exhibits going on at Dulles International Airport and at Walter Reed. And Walter Reed panel will be coming on June 26th to the Military Women's Memorial as part of a Uniting Us program, a panel discussion about the spectrum of healing arts.
Once again, the website address to get more information on Summer with the Arts, the exhibition at the Military Women's Memorial, is unitingus.org. Cynthia Scott, thanks so much for being with us, and of course, thank you for your service this Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks so much for hearing her story as well for Memorial Day.
And again, that's unitingus.org. We're at 7:25. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Still to come, we're going to talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about what's going on down at the border. We'll also talk with Tony about the Biden budget. Oh, boy, is that ever insane in terms of the money that is expected to be spent in that Biden budget. And what does it mean for national security? That is a budget buster. That is coming up here on the Saturday Morning Update. And we'll talk with KT McFarland about the upcoming Russia-U.S. summit as Joe Biden sits down with Vladimir Putin. That'll be interesting. All coming up. Stay with us on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Teachers in Maryland will have to go back to classrooms in the next school year if Governor Larry Hogan gets his way. Yesterday, he vetoed more than a dozen bills, including one that would have let some teachers continue to do remote learning. Hogan said they can't create additional barriers to learning. Senate President Bill Ferguson says legislators will look over each vetoed bill and decide whether to override it. If your kids are going to summer camp, they won't need to wear masks if they're fully vaccinated.
But they're still recommending them for unvaccinated kids, both inside and outside if it's crowded or there's sustained contact. Though the actual camp rules will remain a local decision, including whether to require any proof of vaccination. Pfizer's vaccine became the first to win emergency authorization for 12 to 15-year-olds earlier this month. Since then, more than 14% in that age group have had the first dose. Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Today is President JFK's birthday. He was born on May 29, 1917. A ceremony will be held at Arlington National Cemetery. The cemetery's executive director, Karen Durham Aguilera.
I will be hosting a presidential wreath laying, and it'll be around 9:50 a.m. at his gravesite with the incoming Military District of Washington Commander Major General Al Pepin.
Anyone can go. WMAL Sports, the Nats play a split doubleheader against the Brewers after their game was rained out last night. The Wizards play the Sixers in Game 3 of their NBA playoff series tonight. The Wizards are down 2-0. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia on Route 1, heads up northbound. In Dale City, all the lanes are blocked for flooding between Orpitz Boulevard and Bel Air Road. On the southbound side of Route 1 in Woodbridge, all the lanes are closed because of flooding between the Prince William Parkway and Bel Air Road. In Fredericksburg, on 95 northbound, there is a crash. Left lane is blocked right near Plank Road, exit 130. And in D.C., on Tilden Street, northwest D.C., eastbound, all the lanes are blocked for a fallen tree between Connecticut Avenue and 29th Street. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Periods of rain, clouds, highs today only going to reach the mid-50s, which is more typical of mid-March. As we hit later on tonight, periods of rain and showers, we will see lows dipping back into the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around the 50-degree mark in town. Here Sunday, mostly cloudy, again scattered showers, the heaviest in the morning. I think we'll start to see some light activity through the afternoon. Highs, though, still cool in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL, of course, Memorial Day weekend, unofficially marking the beginning of the summer season. But the true meaning of Memorial Day is to honor the men and women who have given their lives in service while serving in the United States military. A lot of things you can do on Memorial Day weekend. Something special would be to appreciate the history of our American veterans, our American men and women in service. And we are joined this morning by Monica Mohindra. She is a spokesperson for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. Monica, it's so great to have you with us this morning.
Thanks so much for letting me be here.
Tell us about the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress, because there are ways that people can go online and see so much information there.
Absolutely. The project was created unanimously through congressional legislation in October of 2000 with the purpose to collect, preserve, and make accessible the memories of our nation's veterans so that we can hear directly from them. By gathering their human experience of military service, the thoughts, emotions, remembrances of those who served in the U.S. military, the nation, we all better understand the realities of war and our collective history as shaped by those events. Together with individuals and organizations around the country, we have collected over 111,000 different firsthand narratives, ranging from oral histories to original photos, letters, and diaries. Spanning from World War I to the current conflicts, this important archive of first-person narratives includes every ethnicity, gender, and conflict. With over 18 million U.S. veterans today, now is the time, as you mentioned, to get involved in participating in the Veterans History Project. And you can do that by going to our website, www.loc.gov, G-O-V, as in government, /vets, V-E-T-S. You help to preserve our veterans' stories so that we, together, can create a living, lasting memorial to the spirit of service. When veterans sit down with their neighbors or family to create this document of their personal experience, we're not only enriching understanding between people now, but together you're making an authentic document of history for the future, an ongoing ripple effect. Just as you mentioned, looking to Memorial Day, we just lost former Senator and Navy veteran John Warner, whose interview, by the way, the Veterans History Project has. An oral history is both a process and a product. So not only can you sit with a veteran who's your loved one in your life, in your community, this Memorial Day, you can go to our website, hear his story, sit and remember other veterans, or learn a little bit more about your veteran's experience through those stories already shared. Even if your veteran happens to be deceased, you can use our search box on the webpage, again, loc.gov/vet, to look at granular search terms and understand about where the veteran that you're interested in may have served, or the conflict, or what their type of service was.
So I know this year you have an emphasis on our Gold Star families.
The Veterans History Project has a special collection within its overall mission to engage with U.S. Gold Star families. And the legislation specifically speaks to the idea of Gold Star families being those who are immediately related to someone, a service member, who was lost as a result of war. On our website, you can find more information about that. You can search for those specific collections. You can read blog posts that detail the personal experience of those Gold Star families. In addition to the tools on our website that help you learn how to interview the veteran in your life, there are also tools available on our website to help you interview Gold Star families who are your loved ones and in your community.
And this year you also have a focus on women in military service.
Yes. Women, when you look at the census, the IRS, the VA statistics, make up about 10% of our veterans population. We currently need the public's help. We need your help to reach the women veterans in your life. Our collections are currently about 6%. of our overall collections, women, to that 111,000. And we could certainly use your help in ensuring that their stories are also truly represented within our collections. Ask that women veteran in your life who maybe hasn't had the chance to share her story yet some gentle questions to get her started in thinking about joining you in this process to create that important historical legacy.
Monica Mohindra at the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress. Thanks very much for the information. Thanks very much for what you're doing. And thanks for being with us this morning. And you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
You as well. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. It's 7:42, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. We're having a little trouble connecting with Tony Schaefer this morning, so we will be joining KT McFarland next. But first, we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
On 295, the Anacostia Freeway, southbound in the city, there is a crash right at the 11th Street Bridge. Also in the city, northwest, Tilden Street, eastbound, all the lanes are blocked for a fallen tree between Connecticut Avenue and 29th Street. On 95, northbound in Fredericksburg, you're going to find a crash. Left lane is blocked near Plank Road. And in Prince George's County on the VW Parkway, southbound, there is an accident at Route 50, Kenilworth Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid-50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region. Scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Still 52 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:44, Saturday Morning Updates, WMAL. The Saturday Morning Update continues. It's Memorial Day weekend. We are joined by K.T. McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She was the first Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration. Illustrious career. Goes back to working with Dr. Henry Kissinger, senior speechwriter to Secretary of Defense Kat Weinberger, and a Pentagon spokesman as well. So, KT, good morning. It's great to have you with us.
It's an honor and a pleasure every Saturday. Thank you, Rick.
Let us go to China, because there is a lot of news now about the COVID-19 origins. The contrast in the Trump administration, of course, there were interests in investigating China. President Trump was putting it on China, and it was all dismissed by the pundits, by the Democrats. And now it seems like a 180.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's increasing evidence that China really was responsible, that it was manufactured in the Wuhan lab. And the media, in their frenzy of hatred for Donald Trump, and anything Donald Trump said must be wrong, so they're going to go 180 degrees in the other direction. Well, they were complicit in this. I mean, they have now missed not just the biggest story of the century, but I think they've done untold harm, not just to the American people, but to the world, by rejecting anything that Trump said or anything that Trump's people said about the virus and the origin of it and the lethality of it. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, with the American people, and we're not stupid, we're abandoning the media, the corporate media, in droves. I mean, the only part of the New York Times that is gaining readership is their recipes section, which is actually pretty good. But no, I mean, people aren't reading the New York Times. People aren't even in New York. They're leaving New York for Florida. CNN's ratings, they're down 70%. I mean, they can't survive and continue to lose money like that. And then the wokeism, and I use that word in a very broad way because I think it encapsulates all the other stuff that goes with it, you know, the defund the police, the cancel culture, the wokeism, the critical race theory. I mean, this is being rejected all across the country by the average people. But as when you get back to China, the evidence was there all along. And more evidence is coming out. The two British scientists today have just released a report saying that there was never any way this could have come from nature. It had to come from a lab. And the Chinese, once it got out and they thought they'd be held accountable, they quickly tried to retrofit it to say, oh, it came from bats, it didn't come from the lab. Now, the American intelligence community is now leaking reports saying, look, we think there was really complicit with the Chinese government here. I mean, so the evidence is coming out, more and more evidence that really was created by the Chinese in a virology lab. Now, were they creating a biological weapon? Who knows? Were they just doing research? Well, whatever happened, however it came about, once the Chinese government realized how lethal it was and how contagious it was, which they did in the early weeks of December, November probably even, of 2019, once they realized it, they shut down, they used it as a biological weapon to the world. They may not have designed it with the intention of unleashing it to the world, but once they knew what it was, they did unleash it to the world. And I think that will turn out to be something that the world points to the Chinese the same way the world potentially has now pointed to some of the crimes that the Germans and other countries committed during previous wars, because this was a war.
So, KT, what does the world do about it? I mean, we've got the World Health Organization that seems to be inept at doing anything about it. And with Chinese businesses in the fabric of American businesses and the Chinese Communist Party in the fabric of American business and the global business community, what do we do about this?
Well, I think we start decoupling. But let's just go back and look at what the Chinese have really done, because I don't think you turn China into a pariah of the world without some really hard evidence. You know, they once the Chinese realized what it was, they shut down travel within China in and out of Wuhan. So in other words, Chinese people couldn't go from Beijing to Wuhan back to Beijing. China had sort of circled around Wuhan and isolated it. However, they encouraged the rest of the world to continue to go in and out of Wuhan. People from Wuhan traveled the rest of the world. People from the rest of the world, from Italy, the United States, other countries, went into Wuhan and came back, and then they spread the pandemic worldwide. Once the scientists realized what was going on, the Chinese military moved right into that lab, pushed the scientists aside, and they took charge. Any country that tried to stand up to China at that point, like Trump, like the United States, as they were closing to China, the Chinese accused them of xenophobia, of racism, yada, 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 and the World Health Organization, the organization this whole purpose is to help the world and protect us from pandemics, they turned out to be a shill for China, and they were spouting the Chinese propaganda. And meanwhile, as this is spreading worldwide in the middle months of 2020, the Chinese then went around the world, scouring the world and scooping up all of the resources that would be needed to fight coronavirus. You know, the PPE, the personal protective equipment, the testing equipment, the medical ingredients. And then when any country tried to stand up to China to say, well, we want to know what the origin of this is, China shut them down. I mean, they would not, for example, some of the European countries initially criticized China in the early months of the pandemic, and then China refused to sell them or give them personal protective equipment. So they were left without being with any of the medications that they needed. The United States, when we tried in the Trump administration, when we tried to question the Chinese of the origins, they threatened to cut off all pharmaceuticals, all amoxicillin, all penicillins to the United States. So what that makes you realize is, okay, how vulnerable is the United States to blackmail, economic blackmail, or in this case, health blackmail? I think it's important that we do realize what our critical supply chains are, whether it's ingredients for pharmaceuticals, whether it's things that we need to create and maintain the U.S. electric grid, all of those things which are not very exciting products. We need to make sure that we are manufactured at home or manufactured where our allies are and work with our allies. I think that it's pretty clear that even in the last 48 hours where the Chinese have very aggressively come out and said, oh, no, it didn't happen here. This is all an American plot, that this all happened in an American military base, that it's an indication that the Chinese are not going to back down.
As you look at the administration and foreign policy in the administration and how we deal with this, it just concerns me that we don't have the right people in power that we did in the last administration, people like you at the helm when it came to national security.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Biden administration, and again, I think you and I have talked about this before, a couple of weeks ago, months ago, I was just so depressed, thinking, oh, gosh, you know, I've seen this movie before. I'm old enough to have been through a number of these cycles. We're going to have high inflation. We're going to have high unemployment. We're going to get pushed around all over the world. This is so tragic. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, well, these guys, we'll throw them out. I mean, you know, American people, again, the American people are not stupid. And when I look at the Biden administration, no, they're so ill-equipped to deal with the crises of the day. In fact, they're creating the crises of the day. They're creating the economic crisis. They're certainly feeding the flames and fanning the flames of the social crises that we're having, cultural crises that we're having in the United States today. And as far as foreign policy, I mean, I guess they think that if they just go to diplomatic meetings and have talks, that everything's going to be great. But, you know, you have to actually stand up to foreign countries that are trying to exploit you and push you around. I mean, I look at the Chinese, you know, why in that meeting, the first meeting between U.S. and Chinese officials in Alaska, our side didn't mention the coronavirus or the we didn't even talk about that. Why should they get a free ride for unleashing a pandemic on the world? A pandemic which will have turned out to be more costly and have greater sort of consequence than a world war has had. So, again, you got to stand up. You've got to work with our allies to bring this critical supply chains home, because China is going to suffer a major international hit. For their reputation will suffer a major hit, and they know it, which is why they're busy trying to put blame elsewhere. China has every intention of dominating the world. I mean, they make it really clear. They say it in all their public documents. They say it in their speeches. They plan to dominate the world economically, technologically, militarily, every other way. They initially planned by mid-century. They moved the timeline up with the pandemic. They plan to get there, like, within 10 or 15 years. But they also have to be seen to deserve it. That's why they're on this public relations campaign, to say that the Chinese system is the one that's far better equipped to deal with the 21st century than the Americans. And what this pandemic, especially now that we realize that it was came from China, I think that the world is going to take a second look at China and be more likely and more willing to stand up. And the example I would look to is Australia. Now, the Australians have a very close economic and trading relationship with China. Austria is in the Pacific. China is the major power in the Pacific. And it wasn't until recently that China was willing to stand up to the Chinese. And by China, by Australia, merely by asking to join 100 other countries to ask the World Health Organization to investigate the origins of COVID, the Chinese turned around to Australia and gave them a list of demands, basically saying, you don't dare criticize us. And by the way, we're going to cut off our agricultural imports to Australia of barley and wine, and we're going to try to bankrupt your agricultural industry. The Chinese are not, you know, they will not brook any dissent or any criticism. And I think that now, as the world is going to start criticizing China, they're going to be in trouble.
And we got about 2 minutes left, KT. I wanted to get your reflections on Memorial Day, because so many people just look at it as, oh, we got a 3-day weekend, we can get away. All the news talks about is the travel and the number of people at the airports, the number of people on the highways. But the true meaning of Memorial Day and the American people.
You know, America makes mistakes. I mean, we've made mistakes in isolationism. We made mistakes in the Vietnam War and the Iraq and Afghanistan War. We've made mistakes with high taxes. We've made economic mistakes. We've made mistakes in our culture. But at the end of the day, what we do that others don't is we correct ourselves. And so I look at the men and women who throughout our history have sacrificed for America. And they've not sacrificed for the perfect country. They've sacrificed for the ability for the American people to make their choices. I think the fundamental right of all mankind is free choice. And free choice at its heart is self-governance. And that's why I really applaud all the people who have stepped up to defend our freedom. And it's not all of our freedoms. It's particularly the freedom of self-expression and the freedom of self-determination. And that's something that can only be bought by sacrifice. You know, there's a saying that every freedom isn't free, and every generation has to renew its its quest for freedom. And Ronald Reagan probably said it better than anyone. He said, freedom isn't something you kind of get in your bloodstream or you inherit in the DNA. Every generation has to fight for its freedom. And if not, freedom is just merely one generation away from extinction. And so I think that's that this generation now is going to be facing for the next decade, of how do we preserve American freedom, the American way of life, in a very changing world, and a world which isn't going to be as easy for us as the last 50 years have been.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you for the insight, K.T. So very much appreciated.
Talk to you next week, Rick. Thank you.
And you as well. And that's about it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news. Have a very happy Memorial Day weekend, and also take time to remember a veteran, remember the veterans in your family, those who have given their lives in service and those who are currently in service. Hold them in your thoughts and prayers.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.